Welcome to another episode of Comedy Wham Presents with me, your host, Valerie, and sometime co-host, Miss Purrington. We bring you articles and podcasts featuring the best in Austin comedy in all its shapes and formats. Started in 2016, the podcast project brings you funny people and their stories. As a fan, I like to delve into a comic's background and motivations, and we usually take a detour along the way. Consider the interview a way for you to get to know the folks that make the Austin comedy scene one of the best in the country.
I love Austin comedy so much, and I believe in it so much, and I just feel like...
The thing about comedy is if you have some conviction, it goes a long way.
I always love laughing. My dad is a great storyteller, and that's, I think, part of the influence was my father's. He's really funny, and he's a brilliant storyteller.
What would I do other than be a stand-up comedian? Yeah.
Like, I was always the class clown, but I wasn't ever trying to be. Like, I would just say stuff, and just people would just crack up.
See, I want the audience to love me, but I don't want to be a clown for them. I want them to love me for... My own, for what I'm doing on my own terms.
No, I didn't choose being a comedian. It's weird. It's like being a comedian kind of chose me.
I'm needy. I know I'm needy. But like, I need stand-up. Like, I need people. Like, I cannot imagine not doing this.
Welcome, everyone, to the first ever live Comedy Wham Presents. I'm so happy to see butts in seats. Without further ado, because the more time I let our guest spend up here, it's better for all of us. So he's going to do a short set, and then we'll sit down for the interview together. Please, you know him as the host of the monthly showcase, The Sting. You also know him as a frequent guest of Doug Loves Movies. You know him as host of the Canceled podcast, which if you haven't checked out, you really should. It reviews shows that have not even lasted more than a season. You know him as the fan winner of Points Me and first fan guest of At Midnight, might have heard of it, on Comedy Central, and he is the star of Chris Gets Money, and he's a perennial Austin favorite. Please welcome Chris Cubis. Chris, I feel so guilty.
For what? Making me leave the house?
Well, that. But when was the last time you did a 10-minute set?
It happens. It's rare, but I still do it. Showcase shows. You do short sets. It's fine.
You're a one-hour guy.
Not this high, honestly. Oh. That's a new change. I mostly have a couple drinks before I go on loosen up, but I'm doing one of those dumb don't drink for a month things.
Oh,
so
yeah. Well,
so I just got stoned and said like an adult.
I'm going on 4 years, I think. So.
Did you say four or 40?
Rough. Well, sure.
No. That's not an answer.
I know that's not an answer.
Okay.
It's not about me. Chris, thank you so much for, since the day I started Comedy Wham, the podcast portion, you have been somebody I've been wanting to talk to.
Okay.
And that was intimidating enough if it was in my home studio, but now there's people that are paying attention, so it's really intimidating. But on multiple times, you've assured me that I was going to get through this.
Yes,
so.
We'll just have a conversation. Right. Stop paying attention to these people.
Okay.
They'll be fine.
Okay.
Also, if they don't laugh, we're going to kill ourselves. So
that's true.
It's in the writer. I don't know if you write it clear enough.
I don't know if you've done any homework, but I like to start off each of these with an icebreaker question.
Okay.
One word to describe your past.
Whoa. Wow, okay. This is deeper than I thought right from jump. One word to describe my past, I would say... interesting. I'll say interesting, because it's not spotted. Like, I don't have a checkered past. I didn't... Yeah. I've been arrested once or twice, but nothing for anything serious. Weed shit. But, like, I definitely think I've led a most people. Most people haven't had a lot of my experiences. But that's the same for everybody.
Sure.
I'm getting way too introspective. Hold on a second. Here's what I mean to say. I was born in the projects of Staten Island, but I moved upstate to a very rural, like, farm country place when I was, like, maybe 7 or 8. So having lived in both of those weird kind of like very unique places that don't really overlap, there's not a lot. That Venn diagram is like a sliver of people who have done both of those things.
So yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. Do you have a very early comedic memory that you can think of from growing up?
This is how washed I am. All right, I'm old as shit. You know, I'd be shocked who gets this reference. I have a distinct memory of watching Sha Na Na on like PIX in the city when I was like 4. I don't remember much. Yeah. If you don't know who Sha Na Na are, they are like kind of a novelty band that just sings like 50s rock doo-wop songs, but somehow also opened Woodstock. They were like the first band on Woodstock. They had a TV show, kind of monkeys, kind of maybe less skits and more singing. Yeah. The lead singer, Bowser, could put his whole fist in his mouth. That was a thing. So yes, I believe Sha Na Na has really shaped my comedy.
I don't know where to go.
Yeah, Sha Na Na's weird, man.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching them too, and I love
weird
them,
old like, because like I'm older than most people, but then my childhood memories are a lot of shit that like my parents were watching or my parents were listening to.
Yeah.
So like my mother used to listen to Soupy Sales on AM radio when I was a kid. So that's deep, deep, yeah. Deep. Lots of this is for a specific nerd. Bobby the Brain Heenan, the manager from the WWF when I was a kid, was on Zuby Sales, and I was maybe 8. It was leading up to WrestleMania 3. Andre the Giant had just turned on his best friend Hulk Hogan to became a bad guy, and now they're going to have a fight, and it was Bobby the Brain Heenan's fault. He turned Andre against Hulk. So I was like, I'm calling that radio station, and I'm giving that Bobby the Brain Heenan a piece of my mind. 9 years old. So my mother's like, absolutely, let me get a tape. So she records it. I don't lost the ether, but there definitely was a tape that got broke out a lot when I was a kid. So I call this radio station. They put me through to Bobby Brain Heenan, and he proceeds to roast the shit out of me for like 10 minutes. I was like, mister? And it was just off to the races, and it was just him. And I remember laughing like the whole time, just laughing, being mad, but still laughing. I was like, oh, that's like the best. If you can make someone angry and laugh, that's a beautiful, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I have to ask just for the just personal satisfaction, because I think I grew up in that similar era. Were you a fan of the duck?
The duck.
The one who sang the ridiculous songs?
Oh, you lost me on that one. Okay, Disco right. Duck, I remember that being
that's,
a song.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know that's a thing, but that's a little before my time. Okay. Just before my time.
All right, all right. Okay, well, we won't chase that trail. Did you start stand-up in New York?
I started stand-up in upstate New York.
Mm-hmm. Lots of venues for you, right?
No. The first time I did stand-up, I had to drive like an hour and 20 minutes away to this place. It was maybe an hour. It felt like more, but maybe it was an hour. But it was pretty far. To this place called the Funny Farm in Broad Albany, New York. I have not Googled it. I have no idea if it's still there.
Why did you do it? Why did you...
It was an open mic. It was far enough away that no one I knew was going to be there. So if I bombed, I wasn't going to feel shitty about it. And I was at a place where, like, I was working at the post office. I was, like, I don't know, I was old. I was 28 when I started. And I remember thinking, like, well, I'd always wanted to do comedy. Like, I grew up watching, unfortunately, Bill Cosby. It's a shame. I didn't know. It's not my...
Yeah, I mean,
everyone loved him. That wasn't just me.
Right.
I get now he's a monster, and it's unfortunate. It's tainted a lot of my memories, but if I'm going to be honest... Yeah. I didn't go straight to Bill Hicks. I made a couple detours, a couple points. So I'd always wanted to do it, and I remember sitting on my couch, like stoned with some friends, playing video games, 28, decent enough job. We're like, oh, there's going to be a pension, you'll make good money, there's overtime, like that real small town bullshit mentality. And I was like, if I don't do something, this is going to be it for life. Mm-hmm. And I went into comedy, and... did just well enough, and by that I mean got like a laugh in a horrible open mic set, 3 minutes or whatever, that I was like, oh, I literally got off stage like, Well, so the helicopter from Hollywood's going to be outside right now. And I drove home, threw a rod in my car on the way home, and had to get towed. Had to call my friends to come pick me up. Car got towed to a lot. Abandoned that car, by the way, on a lot. Never made another car payment. The repo man showed up one day, and they were like, "So you know why we're here? Where's the car?" And I was like, "Schenectady? I don't. Good luck." So yeah, to answer your question, I started comedy in upstate New York.
So with those first great first time memories, why did you go back?
You get that one laugh and then that's...
You're hooked.
It's that fucking, yeah. It's the heroin move. You're just chasing the dragon after that. Yeah. It just is what it is. And also, this is going to sound shitty, but I had done just better than the other people that had been maybe doing it for a little while that I was like, oh, maybe I'm not George Carlin, but I'm better than these assholes, so I think I'll go back.
In my research, I think that 2018 marked your 10-year anniversary of being in Austin, is that right?
Yeah. December of 2008, I moved here.
Literally 10
on
years
a
ago.
Greyhound? Wow. Did I move here? No, I was on the bus. I came here on a train. I came here on Amtrak, I think. Yes. And... I left a blizzard. I remember distinctly when I left New York, there was like 3 or 4 feet of snow on the ground. And I got here that night and it was like kind of flurrying like a little bit. And Jake Flores called me. He's like, "Are you seeing this shit? It's crazy. We're going to build a snowman." I was like, "Slow down, Jake."
Did you move to Austin for comedy or just to
escape
that?
Yeah, for comedy for sure. I had come here doing Fun Fest.
Okay.
And more or less stayed. Like, I came here, did shows at Fun Fun, and spent the weekend, and I went home and sold all my shit and moved down here with a duffel bag.
Man. Yeah. And in 10 years' time, you have seen, as I have, because I've been following the scene for almost 6 years, I think, you've seen a phenomenal change to the Austin comedy scene.
I mean, it's definitely much bigger than it was, mm-hmm. for sure. It's always been talented. There's always been a lot of... Austin brings creative, interesting people for the most part, right? So you get those interesting voices. So there's always been good comedy, but there's just so much of it now. You know what I mean? And, like, good. Not just there's 1,000 terrible shows. They are. But there are also... a lot of them. But there are also a ton of really good shows run by really good comics doing like interesting things. Sure. And then also, like, I don't even know how to say this. It's less... When I moved here, you had like Brendan Walsh had moved away and gotten some work, and, you know, Martha Kelly's from here. There were comics. But when I moved here, it was more like, we're just going to fucking do this wild thing and be drunk every night and do comedy and try to, like, and make ourselves laugh and whatever. And now it's like, oh, you can fucking do, you can get shit from this town. Like, you can move, you can be on TV shows and write for things and whatever from doing this scene, and people take it, like, much more seriously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's way more recognition than... Like I said, my benchmark is 6 years ago.
Sure, yeah. No, even from then, like, if you think about, I mean, even right now, so Vanessa's doing a half hour, right? This Mukes was writing for SNL.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. There's so many. Daniel Rugg Webb just did, I can't remember, on Comedy Central, but I'm drawing a blank.
Yes, MK was on an Amazon Prime show.
Yeah. So there's just, I mean, and that's just off the top of my head, not even thinking about Maggie May, who's killing it. Jake Flores is about to open for Patton Oswalt off his own, just being a fucking crazy person trying not to die in New York. I love him to pieces, and he's wildly talented, but like, he did it his own way, and I respect him like wildly for it. He's doing great. Nick Mullen makes $1 million a week hosting a podcast called Cumtown. I love
it's
Nick.
Ridiculous.
Nick's one of my best friends. We lived together for a number of years. We're homies, but god damn it, come down.
Yeah.
Also, his fans, man. Also, I don't want to get the ire of fucking come down fans because they're goddamn school shooters. Yeah. But I was doing the benefit at I was running at this benefit for races at Races, the Texas, or it sounds bad, but they are helping the immigrants at the border. So we were throwing a benefit to them at Red, well, it used to be Red 7, Barracuda now. And Nick Mullen just happened to be in town. He's like, well, hey, can I do a spot? And I said, yeah, for sure. So I put him up, and because that podcast is the most successful thing in the world, a bunch of Cumtown fans showed up and proceeded to mostly just ruin his set.
Oh, God.
Like, the person he came to see, they just yelled through the whole thing.
Oh, man.
They're a weird group.
You have no doubt worked really, really hard throughout your time here in Austin. And I'm...
I mean, I have, but not hard enough. Okay, if I'm being, well, if I'm being honest with myself.
The when I was doing my research, one of the earliest notable connections, because I would say you are connected to some really big names in the comedy universe. Like I mentioned in the introduction, you're a frequent guest on Doug Loves Movies, sure. Doug Benson. One of the earliest names that I saw in your chronology, and there may have been bigger names before then, but in 2013, opening for Ralphie May.
Oh, Ralphie May was big for me. Ralphie was the first comic to take me to open for him. To go, hey, can you come open? He was doing the at the W. Thank you. He was doing ACL Live, and he needed an opener. And I guess he was on W Bob that morning. And they were like, oh, you should do, you should ask Cubas. And so he hit me up, and we did that show. And then he was like, hey, come do all these Texas dates. So he was the first comic to like go, oh, that guy can do it. Take me on the road. Also, the nicest human. I know everybody gets in trouble for saying wild shit, and he had said some wild shit in his life. Rest in peace. But also, he got accused of being a racist a lot. And yes, you can be racist and still have black friends. I understand. But that man, like, if every racist on this planet paid me as good as Ralphie May did, I wouldn't be mad at racism. Money was good. Also, he would, like, he brought me in his house and fed me. He bought me pants. Because the first time I went out with him, I was broke as fuck. I had one pair of show pants and one pair of fucked up other pants that were, like, ripped and shit, but I wouldn't wear them on stage. And he fucking bought me like three pair of pants. Like he was just a nice dude.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
Ralphie was big. Also, I have never, like, talk about a killer. People don't want to be, there's a lot of people that hate on Ralphie May, but I will tell you what, watching him in front of, like, he's in a comedy club, sold out, see Ralphie May, I don't know if I've ever seen anyone murder outside of maybe J.B. Smoove. J.B. Smoove, I've never seen anyone murder as hard as Ralphie May to his audience. Also, J.B. Smoove murders in a way that I don't even understand.
He's crazy.
I was talking to Joe Mandy once at Bridge at the fucking comedy festival.
Moon Tower.
And he said he once saw J.B. Smoove do a set that was just a conversation between two dogs he knows. Not famous dogs. Two dogs he knows. It's murder. Yeah. He makes white people deaf comedy jam laugh. It's the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, God. Yeah. Do you know him?
JB? No, I've met him like twice. Kidding. I've opened for him a couple times, and I've hung out with him very, very briefly, in Montreal when I was there for Rose Battle. But, like, he would always be like, yeah, hey! And then, yeah, he don't know me. He don't remember me for shit.
So when you had that opportunity with Ralphie, would you say that being able to say that name on your resume started opening the doors for you? Or was it the fact that because you got that opportunity, your confidence boosted and then you were able to pick up?
A little from column A, a little from column B. I would say, like, for sure, Ralphie, I could be like, if I was trying to get a guest spot on something or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, comics all like him, so like I'd be like, oh hey, yeah, you know, I went for Ralphie, he told me to, or be like, he would let me drop his name, so for sure that helped. But also, it was the first time that I remember thinking, like, oh, I might be able to make some money doing this. Like, it wasn't crazy money at the time, it got better, whatever, but that first time it was like $600 or something to do 15 minutes of comedy up front at the show, biggest show I'd ever done, and I was like, well, shit, I only need, like, at the time my rent was like $500. So in my head, I was like, well, I only need like two of these opening for famous people gigs a month. Surely I can get two a month for the rest of my life. Not the case, but I remember having that thought of like, oh, there's actual there's actually a possibility of some money in this.
Yeah. We haven't talked about like your actual comedy, and obviously everyone here and listening heard your comedy, but to me, you're the storyteller style, sure. and I've seen you perform enough times. Are you the type of person that when you're coming up with material, it just comes to you and that's what you go with? Or are you a writer? What's your comfort?
I mean, it is... I'm not Jay-Z. I don't not write anything. So there's writing, but I think I tend to come up with my best stuff in the moment. Mm. And I have a weird good memory. Like, I remember, like, I'll hear a song two times and I'll know the words. Like, I just have a weird memory for things. So, like, if I do a thing on stage and it that's like a riff or a new spit or whatever, and I hear, like, a small laugh, I'll get it in my head and I'll go, okay, there's something there. And I can kind of rework mm-hmm. it and rework until I figure it out. But, like, I don't necessarily go, oh, I got to get my notebook, because I mostly just kind of remember shit weirdly. But, yeah, there's a lot of, like, oh, there's something there, and then I'll go back and try to actually make mm-hmm. it better, make it funny.
Okay. Part of why I asked that is I want to slowly lead into eventually talking about Chris Gets Money.
Okay.
But I want to talk about a memory that I had. This must have been 2000. Had to have been 2016. You had gone on tour, and you were on Punch,
okay.
Matt Bearden's show. And I remember you saying, "Trump's going to win this election."
Yep. I don't like to take credit for being right, but.
And the reason that you said it is because you had been touring, and you'd gone to the small communities. And you were very observant about what was happening, you know, outside of our lovely little blue dot in the red state. And it was the first time, because I'd seen you countless times before then, it was the first time that I thought, oh, he's actually got a political edge to him that I'd never noticed. And to me, that informed, like, how I saw it was so natural for you to do the Chris Gets Money.
Interesting. It's interesting to know this is the first time you've ever seen a political edge, because I always think all my jokes have some amount of political, even that, like, I have a lot of dumb ass jokes about stupid shit. But I, like, for instance, I do a joke, and I don't want to, like, break apart a joke or whatever here, but I do a joke about gun control, that my solution for it is that if you want a gun, you got to put a man's dick in your mouth. That's the whole joke. It's stupid. But, there goes on to be more, and there's tangents and shit, but, like, even that dumbass joke, there's masculinity involved, I have ideas, mm-hmm. I just try to say them. I'm not smart enough to say I'm smart, so I just say them. I say them the way I say them.
Well, it just awakened me to the fact that, oh, he's been actually kind of giving me political angles, not necessarily outright political, but like socio-political.
Yeah, I definitely will say that more than, because like I said, I don't know. I got wild into Beto, and then apparently that wasn't right. So now I'm like, whatever, man. Whatever the next one is, just tell me and I'll vote for Beto. I voted for him. I was excited. And now I'm like, oh, he's taking oil money. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Twitter's ruining everything.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us this whole experience with the At Midnight Comedy Central and how you
that was weird, only in that I was about to say comics are, that's not true. I am petty and I have jealousy about things, and I'm not proud of it. And I will say this, when there's a lot of like comics, oh, that guy got something, fuck him or whatever. When someone funny gets a thing, when my friends get a thing, I am genuinely the happiest person in the world. When LaShonda Lester won Funniest Person in Austin, I was downtown with my girlfriend at Drunk Bingo at the Brixton, and I was hammered. And I was outside, and I texted somebody to find out who won, and I found out LaShonda, and I started screaming in the street. I ran inside, took the mic from the DJ, and I was like, everybody shut the fuck up! LaShonda Lester just won Funniest Motherfucking Person in Austin! Nobody knew what the fuck I was talking about. But, like, yeah, so I genuinely do get excited for my friends. But I was at the time I was watching that show, I was like, I was like, I'm not famous enough to definitely be on this show because I'm not famous. But they every once in a while have some like putty you've never heard of. And I was like, I could be the you've never heard of that motherfucker dude. I got that level. And then they announced that contest and I wasn't going to do it because in my petty jealous mind, I was like, fuck you. If you want me on this show, book me on this fucking show like everybody goddamn else. Because I'm an asshole. And then I got a call or an email, I think an email from one of the producers on the show, whose name is Chris D'Elia, but not that Chris D'Elia. Oh, so I got an email from Chris, I was like, what is happening now? And he was like, hey, I don't know if you've noticed, we have this thing going on, we think you'd be a really good fit, would you want to submit? And I was like, oh, god damn it, okay, maybe I should, like, they're reaching out enough, maybe I should stop being a petty asshole and do the submission. So you fill out a packet, you write some jokes, you do whatever. And I was in this thing, you had a couple like back and forth, there was like a Skype interview, you tell some jokes, whatever, they play a couple games on Skype with people. And then I was in the supermarket and I got a phone call from them and they were like, hey, do you want to come do the show? And I want to pretend that I didn't do like a fucking Tiger Woods, fuck yeah, kick the shopping cart, but I definitely did. They flew me out, put me up in this sweet ass hotel, car service back and forth. A little behind the scenes on At Midnight, it's dead, so who gives a shit?
Yeah.
So they put you in a room, you're in your dressing room, it's just you, and then they send in a writer's assistant, and you get the joke, you get the games more or less ahead of time, right? And you just kind of write to the, you write the thing. And they give you a writer, and you can either take all his jokes, they give you like, oh, here's some possible jokes you can use for the thing. You can take all his jokes, you can use all your jokes, you can do a mix, whatever. I got lucky enough to be put with Blaine Kapach, I think even on my first one, who was maybe the best joke writer. Ah. On the fucking planet. Follow Blaine Kapach on Twitter. Okay. He's the best. And but I was, even then I was like, no, fuck that. If I'm gonna do this show, I'm gonna do my chick.
You're the petty asshole.
I'm the petty fucking asshole. Yeah. You're gonna hear my goddamn jokes. And then something in my head was like, Chris, you want to be back? You want to come back? 20% the writers' jokes. Do some of their material because the writers have influence over the bookers. If they fucking don't like you, they're gonna be like, fuck that guy, I killed all our jokes.
Sure.
So use some of his jokes. So I did like 80% of my jokes and then a couple of from the writer's packet. It was great. It was a great experience. Everybody was super nice. Went back 5 or 6 times or whatever. And then Chris Hardwick got in trouble and I dropped At Midnight from my bio. Just to be safe. Just kidding. No, that's not true at all. I'm dragging that corpse behind me. Dusting it off every chance I get. Who's that guy? You remember a TV show from 4 years ago? I was on that.
I have to... Okay, so you're going to have to tell me, is this one 100% yours or 80% yours? From that original episode.
Yeah, okay.
This was a... the other city like taglines, because it's Keep Austin Weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
San Antonio. Y'all heard that Kid Rock album?
Yeah, that was me. Yeah. I think that was me. I'm pretty sure that was me. Yeah, who knows? I'm pretty sure it was mine. Blaine Kapach is a better joke writer than that.
Okay, so one of the things seeing you perform on stage and visualizing you as the storyteller, the At Midnight stuff is very quick, punchy, and then I also had the privilege of seeing you at the roast battle that was recorded here with you and your good friend Kath.
Kath, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was very, you know, short, quick punch. And as a local, to get to see that, to know that you guys are like tight, but you're going after, you know, the jugular for each other, it's just like a magical experience to see that.
She's great. She's absolutely hilarious. She's a great joke writer. I remember I recommended her for that show because they were asking for other comics. And I was like, absolutely. She had maybe the best joke. I don't want to fuck it up because it's so perfect. She said Chris Cubis looks like if a racist white person drew what they thought a guy who... What was it? No. Chris Cubis looks like what a racist person would draw if they wanted to blame someone for inventing winter. That's such a good joke! It's so good.
And you almost have her intonation down.
No. Kath is hilarious. She's I used to give her shit for being too political, and then I realized I was just not political. Like, not on stage, just on, like, the internet, I mean, like Facebook or whatever. Yeah, I mean, she would just... I love Kat.
Yeah.
And I still do. And she's also right about most things. But she was very annoying about it. And then I realized, oh, she's not annoying. She's just right. And you're being a piece of shit. So maybe stop being a piece of shit. So, yeah. I actually blame Kat for a little bit of my wokeness.
So 100% true that the idea of Chris Gets Money was born of a bus ride.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I was on the bus in Los Angeles because I was out there doing comedy. I might have even been doing it at midnight. And I actually got a manager off of that first at midnight money, off that first at midnight appearance. Mm-hmm. They called me that day and were like, hey, let's meet for lunch.
Nice.
Big agency. Big management firm. And I sound shitty, but they do represent a lot of big names. Comedy big names. Mm-hmm. Not actual big names like Hollywood, but like comedian big names. And so I was out there, and they had set up so that Network Fusion was looking for they were calling it Comics with a Cause. They wanted to do a series of comedic documentaries. So they're like, hey, we got you a pitch meeting. Think of something. And I went out and got drunk and proceeded to do that for like 3 days. And then, not 3 days straight, but like was doing shit during the day, and then would go out at night, do comedy, and get drunk as opposed to staying home and writing and coming up with an idea. So then I was on the bus to this meeting, didn't have fucking a single idea of what the shit I was going to say to them. And I looked out this fucking LA bus is not like, I mean, it is, it's just like, it's imagine late night cat metro, but all the time. And I looked out the window and there was a fucking Tesla right next to the bus window. Was it a Tesla? It was either Tesla or Rolls Royce, some fucking crazy ass expensive car. And I was like, something just hit me in the head. And I was like, oh, income inequality, I could do that. And then I was like, well, what's the angle? Like, we need an odd take. And I was like, oh, well, then let me live like the 1%.
Yeah.
And they bought it. And every time I say it, it makes me laugh. It was an interesting experience for sure. In that I got to, like, see how a thing was made. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, be the center of a thing as well. Like, it was just not like a cast. It's me and then me interacting in various situations. So, mm-hmm. like, having that pressure is interesting. It was a learning experience.
Yeah.
And then also, I got to move into a mansion in Westlake and bring all my drunk scumbag friends and spend all their money on beer. And then be like, Jared Hawley, don't jump off the roof. And then Jared Hawley kept going. I kept, like, over. He'd be like, man, I'm not jumping off the roof. The pool was outside, and then I'd be like talking to somebody, and I would hear him talking to somebody else, being like, man, Chris don't want me to jump off the roof. I'm gonna jump off that roof. They're like, Jared, I can hear you. Don't jump off the goddamn roof. And to my friend's credit, everyone he talked to me was like, hey, man, you know, we brought you here. Maybe don't jump off the goddamn roof. And he'd be like, oh, you're right.
I don't know why, but I know that you use that show as the foundation for some of your material that you do today, and you did tonight. And one of my favorite jokes from that is the damn hummingbird joke.
I would get up in the morning, and like my girlfriend came a few nights. She had to work, so she wasn't there. Like, so behind the scenes, it wasn't really 30 days. It was like 2 weeks of filming and whatever. So I was in there for probably like 5 days at one point, and another maybe 8 days at another point. Mm-hmm. So she was there for like most of it, but wasn't there all the time. But I would sleep there those nights because like part of it legitimately was get that experience, be someone who's never had money, which as me still don't. And like this, it seems silly, but I've said it once before, and I don't remember where, but I'll say it again. When you're in a place like that, you get to choose how you meet the world. Right? I'm surrounded by these giant hedges. We're set back from the road. Like, we're out in the middle of nowhere. So I don't... When you live in an urban environment or, like, you know, not the nicest... Not necessarily the nicest neighborhood. My neighborhood's awesome. I have a 95-year-old neighbor living in a household. But, like, we're regular folk. You're on top of each other. So you're woken by your neighbor taking out the trash, the truck coming, the whatever. But when you're in one of these houses, you get to, like, just sort of greet the day on your terms. It's an interesting thing. So I wanted to have like those kinds of experiences with him. So I'd wake up every morning and I would go out on the patio and have a cup of coffee. I'd swim in the pool butt-ass naked. And there were hummingbirds everywhere. There just were. And I was like, I don't ever see hummingbirds at my house. I get grackles. We have one cardinal every so often. But a hummingbird, that seems like...
Yeah.
So that's where the hummingbird came from.
Oh, before we open it up, because we want to save a little bit of time for audience Q&A, yeah. I want to ask you something that I almost always ask a comic, and for you it's especially pertinent because you've had these opportunities in L.A., but you're staying here in Austin, and I don't know if that's something that is a conscious decision at this point that you're staying, but I mean, that's what I observe of you. It's like, you want to be...
Yeah and no. It's... There was a point where I was like, oh, maybe I can make it work. And I don't know that that's still true. Mm. There comes a point where you do have to kind of be where things are being made.
Yeah.
That kills me. I love this town, as with all its fucking problems. I love this town. But yeah, it may be time to shuffle along. Hmm. Yeah, you know, fuck, man. Everybody else moved, nobody gave a shit.
I no,
that's fucking
you
mean.
Know what?
I didn't mean that at all.
You know what? When I asked that same question to Kath, and she told me, because she was one of my very when I started going out in the scene, and I would see her, I fell in love with her. When she told me when we were interviewing, I started crying.
Yeah.
So I just got a little bit of that. It's just these people are I don't.
Yeah, can't be showing people emotions. No. Gross.
I'm a robot. So I mean, I get it. We, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's just about the right moment, and also saving some money. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, it's gonna happen eventually.
Well, with that downer, I guess I should.
Sorry.
No, I think we have Laura with the mic, and we'll start off with two questions, and then we'll do some wrap ups.
If anybody has any, we can try and get two questions.
Of course. Seems, or not. I've got more questions.
Yeah, that's
I can
fine
ask.
As well. That's a
got one?
Sign
okay.
of a great fucking audience. I think you're the best. The audience is fine. I'm the piece of shit. Don't listen to me. Sorry.
I think we have a question over here.
I'm sorry.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am wondering about the matchmaker that was on the movie. It was never finished out, and she looked really annoyed
talking
to you.
She did not enjoy me.
No,
so if you haven't seen the documentary, the point was to get around rich people and then ask them about income inequality, and it turns out rich people can see me coming. They don't. I don't so much blend. So we're having a hard time getting to talk to people, and one of the things we did was we went to one of those like millionaire matchmaker ladies and had her set me up on a platonic friend date with this dude who we'll get to later. But she, first off, called me Carlos immediately, and I was like, not my name, and she was like, really? Like, she was surprised that I knew my own name. She definitely didn't want to be there. I think part of it was that she smelled the setup, but then thought she could, like, oh, I'll get the best of him. And no, you're not. I'm a comedian, and you are a matchmaker, so you're not winning this one. The end of that was her kind of aggressively leaving. Not storming out, but, like, she was like, are we done? And it was kind of, like, was gone. But, yeah, it wasn't a great end to that story, but... The better part of that story is the guy she set me up on this fucking boat with was some dude who his company gets like permits for build. If you're building a thing and you need the permits, his company gets you the permits. So he's fucking rich because everything's being built in this town. But he was like a wild drunk who crashed all these cars in a DUI. He had like multiple DUIs. So he had like an ankle bracelet, one of the alcoholic like Tracy Jordan from 30 Rock ankle bracelets. So we weren't allowed to, like, show any beers with him on the boat or whatever. And he kept talking about, like, all these sad stories of crashing these fucking, like, $200,000 cars. And then he just didn't make the cut. And I've told this story once or twice, but I'll tell it because it makes me laugh. He's talking about how, you know, he didn't have money growing up either, which I don't believe. And then... So I asked him, I was like, so, you know, now that you have, and you came from a place where you didn't have, do you ever think about the people who still don't? You know, you have these employees you talk about.
you know, maybe they need health insurance or whatever. He's like, oh, I wish I was in a place where I could afford health insurance. I was like, motherfucker, you crashed multiple $100,000 cars. Obamacare is real cheap. But I was like, you ever think about the people who don't? And at one point, he goes, he's like, yeah, man, I think about it all the time. Because I'll give you an example. It was, like, it was last Christmas, I was at Half Price Books, and it was freezing cold outside. I remember it was bitter cold. And his family walked in. It was a mother and father and a couple kids. And neither of the kids had coats. And it was freezing cold outside. And he goes, I saw that, and it really touched me to my heart. So I had to leave. Word? Swear to God, I thought you were going to say you bought coats. I really thought, who doesn't lie? Why are you telling me that story to make yourself look better?
I actually want to turn the tables on the audience here, and I want to ask the audience a question. Who absolutely loved watching the Bonobos ads and looking for Chris?
That shit's so weird. Another example of shit falling in my lap that I got a weird message. They're like, hey, we're doing this like theme, this like this launch of this new ad campaign, and we're going to, they have like physical stores in Austin and Chicago, maybe like one other place. So we're getting like groups of influencers from those cities. And I was like, oh, fuck, I'm an influencer? I fucked up. Thought I was a comedian, I'm an influencer. So there was like me and like a dude who was like a musician and a chef and a guy who's like does art or whatever, a bunch of dudes. They paid me like dumb money, flew me out, put me up for like 2 days. And the craziest part was, so it's, if you've seen the commercial, I'm only in it for like half a second. Everyone is. It moves from like a person's face to another person's face every half second. And so there's 100 and something people, split into 2 days, there's maybe 50, 60 people each day or whatever. But there's 10 of us, 12 of us who are influencers. And the influencers got treated better than the other people who are like models and actors and like trying to do this shit for a living. No lie. So they had like catering trucks for like the production crew and the people from Bonobos. And we got to eat from the catering trucks. And it was like, I remember one day I had duck breast confit with whatever. It was like nice food. Came from a truck, but it was nice food. And then all the other people, they were just like, here's some pizzas. Shut up. And all of them are fucking models and shit. So every one of them was like, I actually don't like eat like carbs like that. And that sounds like I'm being shitty, but that's a legitimate concern for models. Like, you have to watch what you eat. And they're like, scrape the cheese off. I don't know what the fuck to tell you. So I kept like, I was sneaking people salad from the concession. I'm still me. So I kept bringing models salad and shit. And then every time I'd be like, man, I'm fucking like, they're treating me better than these people. I am better than these people. As soon as I had that thought, some fucking 20-year-old would like take off his shirt inside for no reason. He would like take off his shirt, stretch, and put his shirt back on. I'd be like, all right, I get it. You're hot. Then a weird second Bonobos point I don't want to make up all the time. They made a mural of that shit by Butterfly Bar on Manor Road on the side of the dry cleaner. I go to that bar. I can't drink under a mural of my face. A fucking monster.
Oh, that's awesome.
I just didn't go to that bar for like 2 weeks until like a month or whatever until I took the shit down. It was too embarrassing.
Oh my goodness. Well, Chris, I think we've...
Did we hit it all?
We're reaching the end.
Okay.
And I like to ask my guests one word to describe your future.
Oh boy, I'm going to do it. Interesting. Fucking scumbags.
It's that memory, right? You remembered exactly that was your...
That's a pretty standard callback. That wasn't as impressive. That's a fairly standard comedian move.
Oh my gosh. Well, Chris, audience, first ever live comedy win.
Give it up for yourself for coming out to that.
Thank you for coming
out. That's awesome. Thank you guys.
This has been Comedy Wham! Presents Chris Cubis. Chris, take a couple of minutes and tell us where we can find you and what you've got coming up.
I'm at Chris Cubis on all social media, so you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm barely on Instagram. It's mostly pictures of my dog. It's mostly pictures that my girlfriend took of my dog that I retake and put on Instagram. My podcast canceled. We watch TV shows that only lasted one season or less. We just finished Bunheads with the wonderful Martha Kelly, so that's a super fun run. And
can I say, I had no idea my so-called life didn't last more than a season.
I know. I had never seen it. It's also fun. Like, so we do good shows and bad shows. Like, we've done Freaks and Geeks. We've done My So-Called Life. We've also done Cop Rock, which if you're not familiar, if you don't know what Cop Rock is, Stephen Bochco at the height of his TV producing fame and done like NYPD Blue, a bunch of shows, decided to make a procedural cop musical because he had all the cocaine. It is wild. There is a song called he's like a, what is it? I'm a baby. It's about a guy who sells babies. There's a whole angle of this cop, he can't get pregnant, so they're trying to buy a baby off this guy who kills babies. Like, I'm a baby seller, a baby for you. And he said, it's fucking wild.
Who's your guest for that?
Oh, I think Norm. I think me and Norm Wilkerson did that one. That was super fun. But we're doing, I'm in the middle, I just started The River with Danny Goodwin. The River is a very weird sci-fi Blair Witch Project show from the 2000s that is very confusing. Yeah. So yeah, so find me on that, and then yeah, if you haven't seen Chris Gets Money, you can watch it on Amazon Prime, so that's kicking around.
Highly recommend that you watch that. That was a...
Oh, I'm coming to the Sting. I do the Sting every first Wednesday of the month. It's super fun over at King B's. I'll come out there. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we are Comedy Wham! Presents. We've got a website, comedywham.com. We've got our podcasts up on iTunes, and we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Comedy Wham! A couple of final thank yous. Thank you to Fallout Theater for hosting this first ever show. Dustin Spalock for recording us.
Dustin, the unsung hero of Boston Comedy.
Absolutely.
If you've heard anything recorded, videotaped, whatever in Austin, it's Dustin behind this.
Yep. Yeah, Matt Farley, who did the music that you heard at the beginning of the show from Moturn Media. Laura and Richard. Laura was our mic girl, I guess. Mm-hmm. She's keeping me on task here. And Richard, who helps us with the website as well. And then I brought my pint-size kiddo here, who is a big fan of yours, as you know.
What's up, dude?
Chris. This has been Comedy Wham! Presents Chris Cubis. I'm Valerie. That's been funny. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you for coming out.